TKF United.
Hello, and thanks for listening to TKF United, Arena Talk That Rocks. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, hey, we got proposals and more proposals.
Yeah, the proposals lead to the renderings, which lead to decisions that we're going to be making as a city, right? That's the idea. And to help us go through these different ideas on this very special episode is DK Aniwo. What's up, DK?
Well, hello. Good evening. How are we doing?
All right.
Good, good. Well,
hey, man, it's coming down to it. We're in the process of having the different plans that are supposed to be redeveloping the Midway District are going through the process of explaining themselves to the city. And pretty soon they're going to start the process of making that decision. Right. So yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the timetable for that? The March 3rd, is the last day of it, and then on the 4th then they start really making the decision process.
So quick review, so this all started like a year ago or so. Mm-hmm. When the new mayor came in, and so at first there was a 60-day window once they announced that, hey, we're doing this thing, for the different groups to register their intent. That closed on December 3rd.
Yeah.
And immediately upon that submission window closing, the current dialogue negotiation window that we're in, which is 90 days, started. And so, yeah, that 90-day negotiation period ends on March 3rd. And then from there on out, the city has a what they call like a sort of public input period. And that's basically just the city staff going through and actually like coming up with a report, some details that they're going to submit to city council's land use and housing committee. And at that point, the public will have some opportunity to weigh in and to chat and kind of give their input as to all this. So hopefully, you know, the listeners to this will be able to go into that. I think it's scheduled for April 14th meeting with some details that we can give them here tonight. And then, yeah, after that, then it goes forward and to the full council. And so I'm guessing by mid to late May, maybe even early June, we should get a decision with respect to, hey, which of these five groups is the city going to enter like that actual contractual obligation with?
Okay, so you heard it here. If you go to that meeting and you mention that you heard about it on the TKF United podcast, you're getting a free koozie. That's it. That's
all I can
say. Yeah, those guys made my mind up. I guess that's the they'll start with. But yeah, this is fascinating stuff. I just want to give a shout out to Jen Bangrove. A lot of our information we're going through is based on her article a couple weeks ago in the UT with what's her name, Melissa Guerrero, the other mm-hmm. one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they did a great job with that, and we're just going to kind of go through the comparisons of the different plans. Why don't we get started with the one that is associated with the group that was originally kind of pegged for this under the Faulkner administration? We have the Discover Midway, which is. Yeah. Is being put together by the Brookfield Properties, ASM Global, for Affirmed Housing, and National Core. This one is on the arena side is offering a 16,000 seat arena. Mm-hmm. Now that you know, people that are loosely following this, I know a lot of sports fans that are really paying attention to this because the 16,000 seat thing really lends itself to, I think, opening up the door for possibly an NHL team or an NBA team. That seems to be the threshold for those leagues to actually expand to your to your market. You have to have an arena, a state-of-the-art arena that has that many seats. What's your opinion on that? I mean, that does seem to be a contrasting thing with the different plans. Is some of them are not that big, and some of them are saying that they are expandable. This one does not have the expandable in the parentheses designation. So on that side, I mean, is this a plan that's maybe more leaning towards just the housing, or what do you think?
Yeah, it's been an interesting one. So for sure, I've certainly seen a lot of the comments, a lot of the tweets, and various different opinions out there about, you know, what is that threshold? You're right, 16,000 seems to be about like the floor, frankly, for like what would get in the door if you were looking at NHL, NBA. I'm not as familiar with those professional leagues, but that seems to be the consensus, right? And what I would say is that, yeah, one of the two. So if you actually go back to what they call like the notice of availability, right? That's the document that went out and said, hey, here's the opportunity. We've got 48.5 acres. Here's what we want, right? You go ahead, you know, development community, show us what you got. Give us your best. We've got 48 acres. We want an arena, and we want at least 25% of the housing units to be deed restricted affordable. That was all the city basically said in like a 2-page document. And so all these different plans are coming in with different numbers, I think different total numbers for not just the housing units, but also, yeah, for the arena. Some people are going with brand new. Some people are trying to, you know, like, I guess, repurpose the existing one with some kind of refurbishment.
And this would be this for Discover Midway, they are saying to renovate.
Correct. Yeah. And so that's their plan. So if you look at a lot of even their renderings, and it's kind of cool, you can look at the five different renderings and you can tell right away if the sports arena is kind of dead set in the middle, chances are they're renovating the existing footprint. If it's anywhere else, then you're talking about a new building somewhere else on that 48 and a half acres. So yeah, they're going to renovate and we'll see how that goes. And then, yeah, their housing units come in, at least according to the good work that our friend Jan Van Grove has put together. It looks like 3,277 units.
Uh-huh.
One thing that I've seen across this entire process, it's been really difficult to tell, is when these people say units, are they talking about like just like the front door, or are they talking about the bedrooms, right? Because for example, a lot of these, you know, some of these other ones that have like a lot of the higher units, they're, from what I understand, they're like studios or like those micro units, you know, like 600 square feet things. But then some of the other ones, like I know Midway Village in particular, that number stands out because they've got so many fewer units. But from what I understand, a lot of their units are actually 2 or even 3 bedroom.
So I think like the majority families and stuff. Yeah.
So it doesn't. It's not clear from, frankly, what the city has put out, what the quota is. It's not clear from the state's guidelines if they discriminate at all between, you know, the difference between a studio and like say like a 3-bedroom. I think they're just counting the front doors, really. When I see units, I feel like that's how many front doors are, you know?
Yeah, and on this little chart we have here, it only says it's taking up 11 acres of the, I'm assuming that's of the 40, or is that a park size?
No, that's the park size. That's the open spaces.
They're doing
spaces.
The smallest park size. Got it. So that's no correlation to the acreage usage, or that acreage. Got it.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's the open spaces. And this plan has, it's pretty much in the middle of the pack for retail space, and it's got the most space for office space. So that's interesting. So is this plan kind of looked at as the more corporate plan that, I don't know if that's fair to say, they're all kind of.
variations of each other. I would definitely say that. The folks with the Discover Midways, they're calling themselves, we called them Brookfield last time, right? And I think my point of contact there is still the same person that we talked with all throughout the campaign and everything else. And so I think they've actually gone out of their way to try to be more of a neighborhood serving sort of community oriented, I guess, effort, right? Like, so they opened what they call a community advisory board right after they got selected by Faulkner. And so I've been part of that since day one, effectively. And I'll give them credit, actually. It's interesting because they went obviously last time and then now they've come back with these slightly different rules. I've seen like a little bit of like the differences between their first version and this version, I would say. They've actually increased that 11 acres, that open space. Initially, I think it was only supposed to be 5 last time around. I think they've actually come back with a few more housing units overall. I think last time it was meant to be like 2,200, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 2,100. And so they've added like another 1,100 units. And I think that is to kind of.
So they are a little more malleable to like just being a part of the process. That seems to be an advantage for them, right? That they've been through this a little bit and
they've tried before. Yeah. And I would say like for both them and Midway Village has been interesting is that what those two groups, I guess, responded to last time around was a slightly different criteria than this time around. And so I think by virtue of the fact that it is a redo and that there are different rules around it, like, yeah, they've had to change a little bit in order to stay in compliance. But I think Brookfield and to a certain extent Midway Village Plus, yeah, have that little bit of an advantage because they've had the opportunity to get to know at least those of us in the planning group space and, you know, other folks around San Diego who have an insight or interest or insights into this footprint. And so they've been able to make some adjustments that I'm sure they feel give them some version of an advantage.
Well, yeah, let's move on to the next one. Let's look at Hometown SD. Now, this is a group for the Monarch Group, Essex, and JMI Sports, which has a history in San Diego. That's run by John Moores, who obviously had a big hand in creating Petco. Yeah, they're talking about a 10,000 seat capacity sports arena that is expandable. Now, I read a little bit about this, and they're basically saying that, you know, this is the best space for the teams that are already in existence here, and that maybe it's not the goal to just attract like a major league, you know, a different sport, different like a pro team to come in, but that does make sense for the teams that we do have to have a smaller arena and maybe with the potential to grow later. But yeah, I saw that they have an 18 acre open spaces offering, which is significantly higher than Discover Midway. But, yeah. And one difference is that they're planning to have, and the other plans too, are planning to have a hotel with 300 rooms or, you know, hotel space. I wonder, is there a reason why Discover Midway wouldn't offer that? Is that a sticking point?
Yeah, I don't know that it's a sticking point for me per se. I thought that I think with the hotel space, it's Discover Midway is not offering one. Yeah, you're right. Hotel Hometown is, and so are all the other ones. My supposition is that, and this is kind of like a fancy word for Wayne saying guess, right? I'm guessing that some of these other groups are trying to make a play at appealing to the city's revenue streams, right? You know, San Diego gets a lot of their dollars from tourism. And I think that from a programming standpoint, when folks start looking at what happens, whether it's at a new arena or at any of those office buildings and complexes that they build there, they may assume that, hey, like, obviously we've got the convention center downtown, but for different conventions of smaller sizes that maybe aren't worth the convention center sort of scope and scale, you know, some of the buildings can be implemented. So like when they say, you know, square footage of office space, like that might be conferencing space, right? Or that might be general purpose meeting space. And so I think some of these folks, they want to take advantage of whatever sort of incoming traffic, if you will, and keep them there. And so that I did notice actually that Discover Midway was the one that didn't, but I haven't heard a concrete explanation of why any of them are or are not offering hotels.
I guess it's just so if you're going to build a new community like that, you should just have some space for tourism and
guests and
get the hoteliers something, throw them a bone. Seems to be a good idea to get things done, I guess.
Never a good idea to piss those folks off.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I was a little curious about this with their plan is that one thing that sticks out is they're planning to build a 10,000 square foot childcare facility.
Yeah.
I wonder what that entails. I mean, there is going to be office space and retail and everything. And, you know, that does seem that is different than the other plans. I guess that's an outdoor marketplace in that. So.
I think the outdoor marketplace thing I thought was really interesting. I think that's meant to be sort of a tip of the cap to the folks at Kobe's and, you know, that whole sort of history of what Midway has been for such a long time. But I would also say, the childcare thing, to be fair, even outside of this specific thing, and I think even before the pandemic, you know, childcare was an issue in San Diego, right? The availability, you guys have kids, than I know, would know the availability of child of anything that's out there, the affordability of it, right? So not only is it there's wait times from what I read and from what I hear. You know, you register.
I'm a father of three young girls, so I can attest to this. It's difficult.
As soon as you get pregnant, it's like get your name on the waiting list, and maybe by the time they're 16, and so that's the thing. And so I think the savvy developer, right, or the savvy sort of community builder, if you will try to come up with a way to make an issue. Because like I said, that was all even before the pandemic, right? Pandemics made things even more difficult. So I think that's just a recognition, or at least that seeing, you know, a clear call out for childcare facility space, right? Because presumably people who are going to be living there I mean, maybe they work from home. Maybe they work away from home. Maybe the kids can come home from school and hang out in that space before mom and dad get home from work, whatever. I think that's just like being smart, frankly, and trying to implement solutions to, I guess, community and citywide issues, problems within your proposal. I think that this is a competitive process, right? I think everyone's trying to put their best foot forward. And I personally really like the idea, which I don't have kids yet, but I like the idea quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to build a place for families and have it, you know, an entertainment center like that, it does seem like it's a good way to, you know, show people that you're thinking about it at least.
Yeah.
So the next plan we can go through, it's called Midway Rising. Mm-hmm. This one is the groups involved are Zephyr Legends, Chelsea Investment Group, and you know the group doing the arena is Legends. They're going to be doing a 15,000 seat arena that is expandable. This will have 4,000 units of housing and 20 acres of open space. And this one jumped out a little to me is they're going to have 25,000 square feet of retail with no office space. I guess I don't know what that really means, but
yeah, equates to
so that's a little bit different than the other two plans. That's more of a mall setup, I guess, more of that. They're talking about putting together like a public entertainment plaza, so maybe that's all connected with the retail.
Well, yeah, and the extra units, this one has 4,000 units, so it looks like they got rid of the office space, which seems like a post-pandemic move, right? I've heard a few developers are like, we have lots of traditional office space and no way to really fill it. So they're turning a lot of office space into residential now. A lot of buildings are getting retrofit to go from like corporate office space into residential. So that is interesting that there's no office on. And this is the only one without any office space, huh?
Yeah, and I definitely thought that was interesting. That stood out to me quite a bit. Similarly, yeah, the overall, I think so far of the three we've touched on so far, this one has the most amount of units overall. One of the things I wanted to make sure we called out though, so you talked to Zephyr Legends and Chelsea Investment Group. Basically, like I said, the city sort of said, hey, we want an arena and we want housing. And so a lot of these, and some of that housing needs to be affordable. From what I understand, it's like the housing development market, there's all these different companies and they generally specialize in different kinds, right? Some people specialize in single family, there's multifamily, all these different folks, right? And specifically there's folks who specialize in affordable. So the Zephyr folks, I think they're based in Carlsbad, is their corporate headquarters, but they do market rate housing, right? And then the Chelsea Investment Group, they do the affordable. And so it's kind of like that partnership of, so basically the way I look at it, it's like Chelsea will build 1,200 of these units. Zephyr will build the other, 2,800 for a total of 4,000. And then Legends will be in charge of the whole stadium construction and operation. And so when you talk about the different groups that are like affiliated with these, there's kind of like, there's different like, I guess specialties.
That
each of these groups, that each of these different partners have. On the arena side, a new 15,000. The way I look at it, because of the number of units, the number of open space, but then also the amount of retail, when I look at the renderings, you can kind of see it. It looks like Midway Rising has the biggest sort of highest intensity footprint. I've talked to as many of these different people as I can. Midway Rising is the only group that I've not been able to get a hold of or that has not reached out to us and that we've just never quite clicked and connected. And so I haven't had the opportunity to ask them questions directly the same way that I have of the other four. But just like I said, by looking at the renderings, by looking at these numbers, it seems to me like they're going probably to be the biggest, right? You know, they want to go the highest, they want to offer the most amount of, because like floor space, even like that public entertainment plaza, when you look at the Midway Rising one, it's kind of like the arena's on like the south corner, like closest to In-N-Out, if you will. And then there's almost like this like big swooping down, like you can see where it kind of goes like from high to low and then high again as it gets closer to the 8 freeway. And it looks the biggest, right? It looks one of the nicest renderings, I would say, but it also looks the biggest. And so my guess here is that what they're going to do is try to maximize the available public space, but then also sort of balance for that by going bigger in some of these other areas.
Yeah. I see that they're offering elevated walkways. And yeah, I wonder, now is that different than a pedestrian bridge? Because there's two pedestrian bridges in these plans. I don't know.
You know what's the difference?
Yeah.
I mean, I spend a lot of time looking at these pictures, and so like even like when you look at the elevated walkways, I'm assuming that means that there's at ground at grade level connections, but then there's also sort of connections from the tops of different buildings, or like from like the third floor of one building maybe to the fourth floor of another building. Stuff like that. It seems like their their parking structures for a lot of this stuff is going to be connected, where you maybe go into a central like building, but then like you can get from the parking structure on different levels to different buildings that are maybe surrounding it. So I thought that was a cool thing. And the last thing, but specifically the elevated walkways thing, I know it looks like in their renderings, like I said, I haven't talked to these folks, so I'm kind of, you know, filling in some of these gaps. But when you start looking at like where the corner of this property almost touches the 8 freeway, in a couple of these different bids, they're talking about, how can we connect I think it looks like over the freeway too. There's a like the San Diego River is right there. And so there's like a river trail for like walking and biking and stuff that once you get onto, you can go west all the way out to the ocean or east all the way into Mission Valley and beyond, frankly. So I think that's kind of a cool touch that these guys have and a couple other groups have with that like pedestrian walking elevated bridge over the freeway. Obviously, you need more than just the city to get involved with that, because I think Caltrans has freeway jurisdiction.
Yeah, right.
But no, it's a cool concept, and it appeals to me for sure.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, if the entire idea is to make the new Midway not as locked in the way it is now, and just that awkward space that it fills, if you could open it up and make it accessible to the beaches or wherever you want to go in the city, I think that's a great way to do it. Actually, that's cool. Yeah, walking over the 8.
Savvy.
Yeah.
Savvy.
Yep. Well, let's move on to the next one. This is arguably the most interesting one. I think Midway Village Plus, the Toll Brothers housing, Revitate, bridge housing. Revitate's going to do the arena, and they're also talking about a new 15,000 seat expandable. Mm-hmm. This one has the least amount of units as the other plans, but it has the most open spaces. Mm-hmm. 150,000 square feet of retail and 300,000 square feet of office space. Now this is where they definitely get differentiate themselves. They have a 3,500 seat event venue, and they're talking about a 12,000 seat modular soccer stadium. So
yeah, that one caught my attention.
That one, I've heard some people, you know, a lot of the soccer heads in town that have liked the idea of, you know, just expanding that and having another structure for soccer to happen. So what's your opinion on this plan? This has got a lot of interesting ideas in it.
I think this one's super interesting. And like you said, so we talked a little bit about Discover Midway, how that's Brookfield, you know, the group who got selected last time around. Midway Village Plus is, I guess, the version 2.0 of what they called MSED, the Midway Sports and Entertainment District. So they've also had, like I said, you know, more time, I think, with the space and more time to think about this project. Initially, even last time around, they did propose this modular soccer stadium concept that would right away, I think, to your point, differentiate it from any of these other ones. We've talked about an arena and housing. You know, what the city set out was that we want an arena, we want housing. It's interesting, if you actually look at the fine print, I suppose, both of the community plan, which is like this document that says what, you know, any given piece of land across our community should be, and also the fine print of that notice of availability, it actually says arena or entertainment venue.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You could set it up.
So you could set it by either one. I don't know that it would be able to substitute, like say we scrap the arena idea altogether and just go all in on like a soccer stadium, for example. I don't think that's what's been asked for. And I don't think that's what's been planned for. But it's interesting, like I said, when you look at like the framework, you know, I look at the community plans kind of like the Bible, right? At least as far as land use is concerned for this neighborhood. The word is, arena or entertainment. So that's there. Specifically, though, I think what makes this one the most interesting from the soccer standpoint is that modular soccer team. It's only supposed to be there as like part of the phased build out. I asked them a lot of questions about this, obviously, so I know
what to
do. But what they are attempting to do is use the fact that this is like effectively a temporary venue, right? They want to use it for 7 to 10 years to allow this loyal team to go from where they play right now at Torero Stadium, where the capacity is 6,000, to something that's a little bit bigger, help them kind of grow and more, I guess, firmly establish themselves in San Diego. This team's about to start their third season. They start in the midst of a pandemic, so they've got a little bit of a runway to go before they're really, I think, integrated, if you will,
got a big game against the Cholos.
Yeah,
Saturday. Yeah,
you guys going to that?
I want to. I don't know if I can make it.
Okay, well,
kids,
we'll talk. I need
I need a childcare facility.
Need the 10,000 square foot immediately, please.
Yeah, that's exciting. They're gonna play. They're gonna play against the Tijuana Club, and then they're going for it. They had a great season last year, so
like hit the playoffs keep it going. In year two. Yeah, that's the idea. And technically, this weekend's preseason, but I mean, I think just getting those reps in against an established professional team that has won a championship in recent history. Yeah, it's just great experience for everyone included, you know, players and coaches and all that. But with respect to this whole Midway Village thing, I think that once that 7 to 10 years is done, the plan is to absolutely scrap that little soccer stadium and then add on. So I had a question I haven't heard back, and I just asked it earlier today, so I don't expect you to turn around and answer too quickly. I had two questions about this housing unit thing, because 2,400 is by far the lowest amount by like at least 1,000 units, 1,200 units, like smaller than any of these other ones. My question was that calculated based off full build out? Is that based off of like what's proposed from the get-go? Because I do know, like I said, like they're planning on tearing down that soccer stadium at some point and then ultimately building new housing. But the real advantage of like that modular concept is that it's basically constructed somewhere off-site. It's built in. It can be built much more quickly. And because it's temporary, the permitting process is different. And so what I've been told is that the way that it all shakes out is basically they would be able to break ground much, much faster on the soccer stadium piece than any of these other groups would be on any of the other more sort of permanent fixtures, if you will. That would then, I think, trigger some level of economic impact sooner rather than later. And like I said, it just kind of generates a lot of momentum to begin with, right? It gets folks more familiar with coming to Midway for something. Obviously, people have been coming here for a long time, whether it's for the arena or Kobe's or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, there's some interesting sort of, I guess, reasoning and logic behind all of these. And so I'm not entirely sure just yet whether or not the 2,400 units that are in this table is like full build out after the stadium comes down and they build more housing or after. But I'll be curious to see how that shakes out.
Yeah, In Jen's breakdown, there is a section that says additional development on adjacent parcel. Now, what is that describing? That's the...
That's a super interesting one. And I think I've told these guys, this is just my personal opinion, that talking about any additional development is kind of a distraction. And it's a confusion point. That's the reason you're asking this question. Like, what is that? But basically, so the city owns a lot of property up and down Sports Center Boulevard, but the 48.5 acres that we're talking about, that all came, I guess all of the leases for those different parcels expired on May 31st of 2020. That's kind of what really kicked off this opportunity for redevelopment. But up and down that street, and particularly on that adjacent parcel that we're talking about, which is 17 acres by itself, the leases terminated at different times. So I think the like where Phil's Barbecue is, where Hammond's Ice Cream is, kind of just to the side of the arena, that's a 17-acre site where I think the leases don't expire until 2028, 2029 maybe even. So we got a few more years there. And I think the thought process is that, hey, if the Loyal wind up doing well enough to the point with their temporary stadium, January 2029. Sorry, okay. I had to reference that real quick. Luckily, I've got it. So the thought process, and I think this is obviously being driven from the Loyal standpoint, is that if they do well enough in their temporary soccer stadium, what they'd like to do is on that other parcel next door, eventually build a more permanent stadium. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, that allows, I guess, the Midway Village group overall to then go back to the footprint where the soccer stadium was and build more housing. And so I've seen them say, hey, it's an additional 1,000 units, which would kind of put them more in that sort of comparable space to most of what we're looking at. But frankly, and this is just my personal opinion, that like additional space has nothing to do with this whole process. It has nothing to do with getting selected. Mm-hmm. And so like, while it might be cool and it might make sense, it's just like, it's not what we're talking about right here. So
yeah.
And they are coming in with the least amount of units in that.
Yeah. Least amount of units, most amount of open space. But then also they've got a couple different venues, right? To your point about that 3,500 seat event venue. Yeah. So I think that's similarly, you know, based around conventions or conferences or even, you know, concerts, various different things. You know, they've got different, like, I think so AEG, Live Nation, there's a couple of these like event hosting type companies that run tourists and tournament and all these different things. So I'm assuming they've just had a conversation and they're confident that like, hey, we can fill X amount of dates with a space that's X amount of size. But I'll be curious to see, yeah, like whether that goes or stays. Because like I said, right now, this is all just like a summary of what was submitted to the city at the beginning of this 90-day negotiation period. Uh-huh. And as these guys are going back and forth with the city, I'm assuming they're now starting to see what other people are producing, right? Because first of all, no one knew what anyone else was submitting.
Right.
And some things might get scrapped of like, oh, we thought we needed this. Turns out we don't, right? Or it turns out we're more competitive, we did this instead. I'm curious to see from all of these, you know, how many of what we're looking at changes in between now and the ultimate selection.
Have you heard, just by following this process, have you heard anything from people like from Comic-Con that would be like, or groups like that, that would be really looking at this process and saying like, you know, having an eye on it to see if, you know, this could be like, if one of these plans puts together, yeah, like a 35,000 or 3,500 seat event venue, what could that mean for our event that seems to be sprawling out throughout the city, not just downtown and at the convention center anymore? If the convention center could never be solved in San Diego, is that something that is being talked about behind, you know, like, yeah, this could be an expansive way, like the Midway could actually take some of that burden that's, or not burden, but you know, some of that business that the convention center can't really facilitate now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard from Comic-Con or anything quite like that, but I do think that adding this sort of external third party venue, if you will, call it, you know, this other space, it's less about, I think, pulling business from the rest of San Diego and more about pulling business from other parts of the country. Right. You know, part of the reason they say they always need to expand the convention centers because of, you know, all the demand and this and that. But frankly, yeah, this is going to be one newer. Right. It'll be top of the line. It'll be, you know, I think, yeah, smaller, but sure, it's going to have, or at least if it were to be built, it would have, I think, a certain kind of appeal that maybe would be able to pull someone who's maybe going to like the Honda Center in Ontario, right? Or in Anaheim, right, or whatever, or you know, some of these other spots. Hey, you know, San Diego's not too far away. We can do our thing down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more of that framing. But no, to be honest and direct, yeah, I haven't heard anything from Comic Con. I'm gonna say Qualcomm, or any of those types.
Okay, well, the last plan that we were gonna look at is called Neighborhood Next. That's being facilitated by the Con-Am Group, Malik Infill, Community Housing Works, Wakeland Building. They have not designated an arena developer yet, and they're looking at a renovation of 16,000 seats for what we already have. And they are offering the most amount of units by a fair amount, 5,400 units, and 20 acres of open space. Yeah, that's it. That's interesting. You know, I've noticed that this one is the hard, just doing research on this for this podcast, this was the hardest one to find information about. Why is that? Who are these people?
Just kidding. Yeah, their website just says imagine.
I know people,
like a paragraph.
I know people that work at Con-Am, so no shots at all. But I just like, yeah.
Fair. And to be fair, Malik Infill, you know, those are, you know, Andrew Malik's a good friend of mine personally. Okay. I've known him for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So what I would say is interestingly enough, if you look at like that little section of like who's who, the Con-Am Group, Malik Infill, Community Housing Works, and Wakeland, most of these groups have like a primary market rate developer, like I said, an arena person, and then like your affordable developer. Neighborhood Next, right, between Con-Am and Malik, those are both market rate, which just means like they, you know, not restricted by anything. So they've got like two different market rates, but then also two different affordable developers, affordable partners. And so I think what they're trying to do is really get creative about like the amount of diversity of building and building type, and have like a really seamless structure where you can kind of run from, you know, the very, very affordable, because, you know, it's, you know, below 80% or whatever. Can you hear this rain, by the way? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I can. My window's open, and I
yeah, I feel like this is blasting down.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
It's raining. Yeah,
I think it's adding a lot to the
to the ambiance. Yeah. But no, basically, what I was saying is, I think that they're really trying to be very intentional about the community component, right? And about like how these various different buildings can ultimately cultivate, like, you know, an actual living, breathing, like almost ecosystem. And so, yeah, you're right. They have very few, what do you call it, office space units or square footage. Their office is actually zero, but retail is up to like 300,000 square feet. I think they came into this, I've talked to a few of the folks there. I think they came into this bid cycle trying to be malleable and trying to be sort of sensitive to what the city really needs. I think they've got different ideas from the city to a certain extent as to what the city needs. The fact that they don't have an arena partner, I think, is an interesting one. I think that was a deliberate decision to like not so much lead with that and have it be more about the residential and the community and less about the events and entertainment, which I think is interesting. And in a lot of ways does appeal to me as someone who lives two blocks away from the site.
Yeah.
But also I think it's really interesting because the city very clearly said, we want an arena. And so in this competitive process, I'll be curious to see whether or not they stick or twist. Maybe they wind up going in and because initially when I first started talking to these guys before they actually submit, the guy hinted, he didn't show me anything, but he hinted as if though they weren't going to have an arena at all, like blow it down and just like not have an arena on that side at all, not have anything, you know? And I think that's what kind of enables them to go up to that 5,400 units, which is the most by far. And so it'd be much more sort of, like I said, community neighborhood feel and less about that sort of destination, right? Like less about how do we bring people from outside Midway to Midway and more about how do we make Midway its very own sort of unique thing that people who are in Midway stay there for.
Yeah, the plan, like Discover Midway and Neighborhood Next, where they're talking about a renovation of the arena and making it bigger. I mean, I don't know how many. I can't see a city just being like, that's a good idea. We should, you know, renovate this space that's falling apart. I mean,
renderings, the renovation would be pretty dramatic. It would not look near like the same structure. They do have the most interesting renderings, I will say, from what I can discover. It looks like some futuristic green Amazon meets, I don't know how to describe it. It looks very cool.
Yeah.
As far as like the residential, all the rooftops are green. They look like parks on top of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is the most malleable, I would say, from their website at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, when I saw this article and when I've seen some of these other renderings, like I tried to find like the biggest high res one and save it and just make it my new wallpaper. Like, I think that's conceptually like the coolest looking thing for me. Like, I love green things and I love urbanism. And I think they've put together something that is visually quite appealing, right? All these different trees and even the way that like the buildings are terraced, right? It's like one floor is here and then like the next floor goes up and it just
that's what I was saying, like an Amazon jungle. It almost has those like not quite pyramid, like a canopy, but the different buildings coming together. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's almost like a plant, like future, like I almost meant like post apocalyptic, like Planet of the Apes type and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
But instead of like in a bad way, this like, this is cultivated, right? Like we've got you know, water capture, we've got stormwater capture systems going on, like it's like science based. And so frankly, like I said, I love the look of these renderings probably more than any of them. But I do think then, you start to have those questions about how many people are you bringing in, on what kind of concentration of footprint, like how does that impact all of everything else? You know, they also have this pedestrian bridge, which I think would connect over the 8. And,
big on connecting the river. Yes.
Yeah. One thing that I think is hard to tell from all of these different bids, and even though Jen's done a great job of kind of drawing them up, like the specific programming that all of these different bidders want to implement on site, it's hard to tell from these pictures or anything like how that all shakes out.
Yeah.
Right. Like, say, for example, like, you know, if you ever lived in a complex, like maybe you're like complex, they run the pool and the gym and maybe like the meeting room space in your building or whatever. But with the development of this size, I think everyone needs to be very deliberate and very intentional about even like with respect to like when they build what, right? Not all of this gets built all at once. It's definitely going to be done in phases for all of them. And so like what phase gets done and in what order to like start to create what kind of, I think like response or experience. These are all things that like I'm super curious about. Like even on the Midway Village Plus, it's not listed here, but they also have like an affordable housing development partner that does like community service. It's called MAC. And like, if you look at MAC's website, they do like all kinds of, they help people out of poverty. They help people with like job placement programs. And like knowing that they've got, you know, that kind of, I guess, portfolio of operations, like I'm assuming they're going to come in if, you know, those were to be selected and really like implement a lot of what I'm calling the programming of like what gets done on a day-to-day basis inside any of those like corporate buildings or whatever. Mm. Like that's not really carried in this story, but it is, I think, part of what the city is going to need to weigh when the city is going through making the decisions of like, okay, which of these groups makes the most sense as a, you know, partner for the city of San Diego.
Yeah, I mean, you think that a big part of the decision-making process is going to be finding out exactly, not necessarily what they're offering, but the steps at which it's going to happen. They're just going to be asking about your timeline and because obviously all these plans are going to take years to actually complete.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, God, man, that's going to be amazing. So basically this is all going to be decided. They're going to start the decision process after the 4th, have a meeting with the public in April. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at maybe a decision in early summer or something.
Yeah, I think that's a tentatively safe thing to say. I mean, yeah. even so as far as the Land Use and Housing Committee, April 14th, that's the next date after that window closes where it's potentially available. So assuming that goes forward, because right now that's not even technically inked in stone, right? Mm-hmm. So assuming that they do present at the Land Use and Housing Committee on April 14th, from there, it'll be at least 2 weeks, but potentially more than until they go in front of the full city council. And so at the Land Use and Housing Committee, and then ultimately at full city council, I think the public will have an opportunity to weigh in. I know those of us in the planning space, we've talked about, you know, how do we get ahead of this? How do we have conversations with the different bidders? How do we ourselves let, you know, whether it's the council member for our neighborhood or the rest of the council members who make up, you know, that Land Use and Housing Committee, how do we talk to them about what we're looking for? You know, the city staff will have their report, and from what I understand, it's going to be like a ranking. Basically, it'll sort of summarize the whole thing and then say, based off of what we've put together, we think, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C, or like, you know, here's our first rank, second rank, third rank, or maybe these two are, you know, on their par. So like, whatever, like, I'm not entirely sure. They haven't really publicized the process yet, but inside information. I actually have a meeting along with Kathy, who's the chair of my group, with the mayor's office and his team and the team who is making all of this process go through on Thursday of this week. So in 48 hours, I'll text you guys and I'll I'll have a more clear understanding as to the specific timelines and process. But like I said, that's kind of at a high level where it's looking like it's going.
Cool. Well, awesome. You know, we'll have you back on. We'll just maybe check in with maybe in March or see how this is going. And hopefully we get something cool down there, because it has to change. I was down there the other day at Big Five or Dick's Sporting Goods, and I got stuck getting out of the Midway, and I was like, we got to fire up the pod, man. This is like, time. I love being down there at night. I like the nightlife, the sports arena and everything, but man, when I just couldn't, it was like a Saturday and I just couldn't get out.
Yeah. It's claustrophobic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, something oppressive. Has to change.
A few different things need help.
All right. Well, you can follow DK on Twitter at DK and Ewo, and I'm sure you'll be posting stuff about this. And
oh yeah.
You know, once it gets real in the next 2 weeks. So, check us out. We'll be checking in on this story, you know, as it unfolds. I love this stuff. I think it's fascinating, and I love talking to you about it, TK. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys always bringing me back. It's cool. Literally my favorite subject. So I can wake up from my nap and talk about this just as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, we're going to be back, I think, next 2 weeks, maybe, or a week or so, and talk about baseball. That's Ooh. Might not ever happen.
If there is going to be, yes.
Yeah. I'll tune into that because I've been wondering.
Everyone's wondering. There's like not even any, there's not much chatter, which is bizarre. Mm.
Yeah. Strange they don't know parts. What they don't know how to do it. So.
But the Padres did announce that you can purchase tickets for dinner on the field with a player for $20,000.
Yeah.
That's the starting price. So, you know, all of us should, you know, get at least two plates.
Well, we got that podcast.
Thanks to our Patreon support. We should be able to, you know, really get a few plates at this diamond in the diamond dinner or whatever it is.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm living on a different planet, by the way, or like a different parallel universe.
They really
the
know
way
how to
baseball
read.
Has been recently. But anyways, not to go down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in maybe a week or so if there's anything to talk about regarding Certainly. That. So.
We can't afford Tatis. Come give us $20,000 for a dinner.
What I'm prepared to commit to is by the next time I come back here, I will find out. I'll get firm commitments from all of these different bidders as to whether or whether or not they will have a pond.
Yes, an essential part.
This is a pro pond pod. I mean,
pro pond pod.
We need answers.
How is that?
How's the pond turning out at the Qualcomm site? I keep checking up on it, but.
How's that river park going or whatever the hell they brought?
I mean, I don't know if y'all have seen the news lately, but last time I heard that there's some issues over there.
Yeah.
They immediately built the stadium. That was like done. Yeah, we got one. That done immediately. And the rest looks like, you know, a war zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be that. We could check in on that story too.
Yes.
Next time.
Updates forthcoming.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, man.
All right, boys.
Well, I'll see you next time.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.
TKF United.